comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. We're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. Three quick things. First of all, K-Files. We have new listeners every night, and so a lot of folks don't know about that. The K-Files is our free weekly newsletter, and there's no reason not to get it because it's absolutely free. It's a good newsletter. It's been around since 2000 and has helped a lot of people move from the land of mushrooms to the land of light. You know, mushrooms sit in darkness and are fed a steady diet of crap. You need to move out of that. And K-Files will help you do it. Click on my website where it says K-Files and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. It's absolutely free. Speaking of free, have you checked out our freebies? We do have some free downloads for everybody on the site. So just go to the website, look over on the right column over there near the top. You'll see the link that says KSS Freebies. Get yours. There's no reason not to. Also, the show is, of course, member-supported, listener-supported. I don't play ads on this show for commercial products. And if you don't support the show, we don't have a show. So we invite you to become a member today. If you're not a member, become a member. You can always listen for free. But if you like the show, you want it to be here tomorrow, right? So help us do that by supporting the show. It's only $6.95 a month, 23 cents a day. Come on, 23 cents a day. And you would carp about that? I think not. 23 cents a day. And when you're a member, you, of course, get to watch the show live. And you get our archives, and you get our forums and our chat. And by the way, chat. This Saturday night, I'll be in the chat room at Showtime. There's no show on Saturday, so join me in the chat room, okay? I'll be there at Showtime, and we'll spend a couple of hours having a good time. A good time will be had by all. Our show is about the strange and unexplained. It's about UFOs, paranormal, and many other types of things that are strange and unexplained. Over 40 years ago, America was gripped by fear of a serial killer known as the Zodiac Killer. The Zodiac Killer wreaked havoc at will, and the best investigators in America were not able to catch him. To this day, no one has been brought to justice for this string of brutal murders. But tonight, right here on the Kevin Smith Show, we have one of the foremost experts on the Zodiac Killer, one of the foremost experts in America on this very, very mysterious and brutal killer that came to be known as the Zodiac Killer. We're going to talk about these murders. We're going to talk about this killer. I'm going to throw a proposal at this expert, and we'll see what he thinks about it. I may be all wet, but we'll find out. And we'll be back right after this. My guest this evening, as I stated, is one of the foremost experts when it comes to the Zodiac Killer, one of the foremost experts in the USA. Michael Butterfield is a writer who has conducted over a decade of extensive research into this Zodiac mystery. His website, ZodiacKillerFacts.com, provides a factual examination of the case as well as an image gallery featuring the actual Zodiac letters, police reports, FBI files, and other documents. It is an excellent site, and it is linked. So if you were to go to my website and you scroll down and you look at the picture where you see Michael's picture there, the picture about tonight's show, if you click that, it will take you to his site. It is linked. Michael has served as a consultant for director David Fincher's major motion picture called Zodiac, and has appeared on television documentaries such as Case Reopened and the History Channel series Mystery Quest. Michael Butterfield, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks for having me.
Michael, I've got to start out with, you're a writer. I understand why somebody that's a cop or a former cop would be really wrapped up in and interested in this case. I can understand why a fiction writer would be really interested in this case. Your work is nonfiction. I've been to your site. I've taken a look at it. It's very well done. Why are you interested in Zodiac?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not sure that anybody who's interested in the case can answer that honestly. I think one of the reasons that I'm interested in it is because he wasn't caught, and therefore it's a story without an ending, and writers hate stories without endings. But I also think that it has something to do with the fact that ever since I was a little boy, I've been fascinated with the sociology of true crime, the way it affects society, the way society reacts to it, whether or not we change because of it. And the Zodiac case has had a tremendous influence on society over the last four decades, and that's probably one of the most fascinating angles.
All right, let's talk about that. Well, I'll tell you what. First, because we have a lot of listeners around the world who may not know anything at all about Zodiac, about the Zodiac Killer, except maybe they saw the movie, which is a sort of fictional portrayal. Give us a thumbnail of what are we talking about, the Zodiac Killer.
In 1968, in December of 1968, there was a young teenage couple shot on a road, Lake Herman Road, near Benicia, California, which is just north of San Francisco. They were murdered, and there was no apparent motive, no suspects. About 7 months later, there was another shooting of another couple in a Lover's Lane area in a local park. And the person who committed that crime called the police that night to report the crime, to tell them where to find the victims and what kind of weapon was used. And he also claimed credit for the shooting in December. About a month after that, the three Bay Area newspapers received virtually identical handwritten letters from a person who claimed to be the killer. And he included in this message a code which he claimed would reveal his identity. And although the code was broken, it did not reveal his identity, and he went on to attack another couple in September of 1969. He was wearing a bizarre hooded costume with the crossed circle symbol on his chest, which was the symbol he had adopted along with the name Zodiac. And then he called the police again to report that crime. And then in October of 1969, he murdered a cab driver and took a large chunk of the cab driver's shirt and began sending pieces of it in with his letters to prove that he was the killer. And although that was the last known Zodiac crime, he alluded to many other murders after that in letters that continued all the way to 1974. then he just vanished without a trace, and nobody's seen him since, and nobody has any idea who he was.
Okay. I think our international audience also needs to be aware of the fact that not only were local police involved in this investigation, the FBI became involved in this investigation. And so you had some of the top investigators in America working on this, and he eluded them. It is possible that cipher, that code that he sent, may identify him. And we will we'll explore that a little bit here in a bit. Let's talk about how you said you've been fascinated with how true crime situations affect society, and that this has certainly affected society. How has the Zodiac killings, how have the Zodiac killings affected society?
Well, I think you could start off with something very simplistic in the sense that prior to the Zodiac, there weren't very many serial killers like him who wrote letters to the media or called police to report his crimes or wore costumes. This had a tremendous influence on society in the sense that over the years that sort of became the archetypal version of the serial killer as seen in popular culture, in films and television, where every serial killer seems to be communicating with police and calling people and leaving threats and sending messages and all kinds of things like that. But again, that's very rare in real life, but I think the influence of the Zodiac and a few other killers has served to sort of cement that version of a serial killer in popular culture, but also in ways that are very easily detected, such as well, you have to think, you know, the Zodiac terrorized the Bay Area with letters, and he demanded that his letters be printed in the newspapers and things, and he wasn't caught, and I'm sure that was very frustrating to the citizens of San Francisco. So they sort of got a little fantasy reprieve from that when the movie Dirty Harry came out, which was about a San Francisco detective pursuing a maniacal serial killer who called himself Scorpio and wrote letters and such. And at the end of that movie, Clint Eastwood killed the Scorpio, gave us an ending we didn't get in real life. But also, I think, you know, besides the media and things like that, the case in 1990 inspired a real-life copycat killer in New York City, a guy who had apparently read a famous book about the case and became obsessed with it and began shooting people in New York and writing letters. And he actually claimed that he was the original San Francisco Zodiac. And when he was caught, of course, it was proved that he wasn't. And then there was another copycat killer in Japan who wrote a Zodiac letter. And then just after the release of the movie, there was a guy, I believe in North Carolina, who killed his girlfriend because she was pregnant, and then he tried to make it look like a Zodiac murder. So those are just a few examples of the way that it's affected our society, and I think it's had a tremendous effect on popular culture.
Of course, any series of crimes like this, we think that there are no layers of innocence left on society, and yet every time something like this happens, it strips off another layer of the innocence we didn't know we had.
That's right.
And we become different people as a result of that, generally, and the way that we handle ourselves out in the world, in public. When I came back, when I came back to the United States, it was the end of 2003, right at Christmas time, and I noticed immediately. I got dumped off the plane in Phoenix, Arizona, and I noticed immediately there had been a massive change in society while I had been out of the United States. I was out for several years. But the massive change...
Because of 9/11?
Yeah. The massive change was most notable in the fact that no one looked at anyone as they walked down the streets. Mm-hmm. And not many people were walking down the streets. Hmm. And as you approached, if you're walking down the sidewalk, as you approach someone, they would look down at the ground.
Everyone's afraid.
Everyone was afraid, and everyone is still afraid. And this is why I ask the question all the time about the perpetrators of 9/11. Did they really win? Well, you're not free anymore. I guess they did. You're afraid now. I guess they
won. Terrorism creates terror. It's successful.
Yeah, and, you know, people don't even know how to begin to try to live free anymore. It's gone. And for most people, and for a very large number of people, and we live under this cloud of fear. Well, that was happening because of the Zodiac killings. That was happening 40 years ago, and more than 40. There's some residual of that. And then each act of insanity and terror piles another layer of that kind of fear on society.
It's like a pebble in a pond.
Mm-hmm.
The ripples just keep going out. You know, it's amazing to me that 40 years later, the case has had an effect on our society, and it does affect people, and unfortunately it has an adverse effect in the sense that, you know, a lot of public tragedies bring out the worst in people. They bring out, I guess, what you'd call the riffraff or the kooks, mm-hmm. the opportunists, people who want to exploit it, and that's one of the more colorful but also disgusting parts of this, is that you see sort of the worst of society coming out to exploit the tragedy of others for money or attention. And I think that, if you don't mind me expanding on that point for just a second, there's the idea that the end of innocence, a lot of people who grew up in California mark the end of their innocence with the beginning of the Zodiac crimes. People, you know, used to go to Lover's Lane and kiss and neck and make out all night and everything, and suddenly you might get killed by doing that. And so people would stay indoors. And one Halloween, the threats from the Zodiac became, the Zodiac threatened to attack a school bus filled with children, and authorities became so afraid that this might actually happen, and also afraid of what would happen on the night when people wear masks and walk around, that they encouraged people to keep their children home on Halloween, which is something that kids remember, and they also remember the sheriffs and police and other people riding alongside the bus with guns and being followed by police cars. So if you grew up in California in that period of time, you know, the Zodiac killer was your boogeyman.
Now, you say all of this stopped in 1997, right?
No, actually, the Zodiac first murder was in 1968. He sent letters until 1971. Then he disappeared for 3 years, resurfaced with a brief spurt of a few more letters, and then he vanished in 1974. So it's actually been quite a long time, although, like I said, there was the copycat serial killer in New York in the 90s.
Do you know if the FBI ever did a profile on the killer?
There have been allusions to profiles over the years, although I've never seen a printed version of a profile. There was a gentleman who worked for the FBI during the early 1990s who was consulted, and he offered what is considered a sort of a standard approach to profiling a killer like the Zodiac. And as I said on a recent interview, often these profilers come up with these ideas about what a killer must be like, and then when they're captured, they're nothing like what the mm-hmm. profile said. And a good example of that was the BTK strangler in Wichita, Kansas, who in the 1970s had committed a few murders, called the police and wrote some letters, and then disappeared. And the profilers had their ideas about this guy, and they sort of mirrored the general profile of a person who wouldn't be married, wouldn't be able to hold a regular job or maintain relationships with women, wouldn't be a parent, wouldn't be a loner, and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then 25 years later, when the BTK killer resurfaced and was captured, he turned out to be a parent. He was gainfully employed, he was married, and he was the president of his church. So the profiles that they usually have, I don't know that they're going to be all that applicable, although in the Zodiac is a very unique killer, even though there are some that are similar. But I think, you know, you've been around long enough to remember when they didn't have the term serial killer, and they used to call people lust killers or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that our understanding of these killers is still in its infancy stage. And we're only learning what we know from each one that we capture, although each one that we capture doesn't really tell us everything about all the others. So the Zodiac profiles, I believe, in my own opinion, are outdated. They're based on ideas that we know now don't have much basis in fact.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because most profiles deal with sort of psychological factors in this person's life. Mm-hmm. And the problem that I see with profiles like that is that here you are using a rational mind to try and put some rational pieces together about a very irrational kind of act. Irrational from the perspective of societal norms. The problem is that whatever these people are doing, and they're not necessarily insane, whatever they're doing, they have rationalized. And so within the context of their very aberrant view of the rest of us, it makes sense to them. And there's no way that you can have matter and antimatter exist together. You cannot have rational norms trying to understand irrational norms through a rational lens. It never will work. We have to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this, so do not go away.
Smith
Show. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Michael Butterfield. And we are talking about the Zodiac Killer. Some people have referred to the Zodiac killings as America's Jack the Ripper. I'm not sure that it has... it may be, I guess. I'm just not sure that it has the same aura as Jack the Ripper has. That's another famous unsolved case. Have you, Michael, been able to come to any conclusions about who you think did this?
Yes. The person who did this is what we call an unsub, an unknown subject.
Okay.
I don't mean to dance around your question there, but there are a lot of named suspects, people who've been vigorously investigated over the years. And none of the evidence implicates these individuals. As a matter of fact, all of the available evidence indicates that none of the named suspects was the Zodiac. I would love to know who he is, But all of my research indicates that he is an individual who remains unknown and most likely was never investigated as a suspect because he was probably able to appear normal enough to avoid suspicion.
I think there's another reason he was not investigated, and I'll bring that up later. I'm not so sure that appearing to be normal would be sufficient to keep you from being investigated.
Well, I think it would be sufficient to keep you, because I think one of the things that we have to remember is, you know, it's and I know you know this, but there's not like a telephone book filled with serial killer phone numbers and names.
Mm-hmm.
So when something happens, the odds of finding a person like that, unless they've left some trace of them behind that leads to them, the odds of finding that person are akin to finding a needle in a haystack. So we may have evidence that could identify him, but we don't have any path to find him.
Mm-hmm.
So he may avoid suspicion because he seems normal enough and because there's really no way to track backwards to find out that he would be a suspect. That's my opinion, at least.
Well, and that actually is a description of part of a pattern that I see with this killer, and that being that this is a person completely dissociated with this type of bizarre behavior, except when he's doing it.
That's right. Serial killers are traditionally very good at compartmentalizing. And the better they are, the more prolific they are, the more successful they are, the more elusive they are, the better they become at separating that part of their lives into a small little box in their mind, and then they can go about doing everything else. I believe that very firmly with a lot of people, especially someone like Ted Bundy, who, you know, was a young Republican and a law student and very well liked, and people had no idea how truly depraved he was, and that's because he did such a great job of keeping that part of his life separate.
That's true. I think there's a difference here, though, with the Zodiac Killer, and I may be all wet. Let me tell you the description that I see here, okay? The description that I would arrive at from the evidence that I see. And I don't get into psychological stuff here, but this is a person who is relatively well educated. The fact of killing people to make a point, which he was doing, he was killing people to make a point. I know what he said his reason was, but I'll get into that in a minute. He was killing people to make a point, or he would have kept doing it.
Yeah.
So I think he's a person who's very narcissistic. He's going to have it his way, by God, and dare the world to do anything about that. He's smart. He's really, really smart. He knows some things that are outside of the normal knowledge bank, the normal information bank of most people. There's an indication in this that he is either he has either been law enforcement, or he has been military, or he has hung around a lot with law enforcement and military people. Or law enforcement or military people. Now, the reason I say that is because he wrote a letter bragging about the cops couldn't figure out how he was able to shoot in the dark and be so accurate.
That's right.
And he describes taking a small pen light, flashlight, taping it to the barrel of the gun, and he says, in the center, when you turn that light on, right in the center of it is a dark spot where the light falls. And you aim the dark spot you just watch, and when the dark spot falls where you want it to, you pull the trigger, and the bullet will go right into the center of that dark spot. These days, that might be more commonly known, but in 1970s, in 68, 69, and early 70s, that sort of information was not general information out there.
That's correct.
So that's the kind of information that tells to me this is either a cop, or he's ex-military, or he's been hanging around with these people a lot and picked that knowledge up.
There is one interesting trivia that you might like to hear.
Okay.
This is something that a member of my message board discovered recently, something that I'm ashamed I didn't know myself. But apparently, a few years before the Zodiac wrote that letter and made that statement, there was a episode of the old TV show Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And the episode was called Museum Piece. And in the story, which followed a young man who was out hunting foxes, he actually has a light attached to the barrel of his gun. And the narrator, I believe it was the character's father, is describing how he had come up with this ingenious way of shooting at night by attaching this light. And that when the light was attached, all he had to do was aim the light and shoot at the dark spot. And I don't have the quote here in front of me right now. I apologize to your listeners. But the quote that the Zodiac used in his letter is almost verbatim the language from that episode. So it's very strange. I mean, a lot of people who have examined this case over the years, people like Mike Kelleher and others, have believed that the Zodiac was heavily influenced by the media, by movies and films and books. And
that's very possible.
I think
possible.
It's very possible mm-hmm. that he had watched that episode, which would have been in reruns, I believe, at that time. And that was just something that stuck with him, and he decided to use that idea himself. But your theory is also possible, too.
Well, I was not aware that that had been on Alfred Hitchcock Presents, but if it had, then it could take away that piece of the puzzle of him being law enforcement.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that he couldn't still be in law enforcement or still be...
Well...
You know, I think I sort of lean towards the person who may not have been involved in the military, but definitely admired people who were.
Could be.
And wanted to emulate them. But it is possible he was in the military, had code training. The boots that the serial killer wore were military issue. So,
I think there was some affinity for that at least. But see, the fact that he was never focused on sort of indicates to me that you're looking at someone whose profession would take them out of suspicion, and there would have to be evidence that would put them into suspicion. You follow what I'm saying?
Someone would have to name them or something.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, you're talking about law enforcement. You're talking about a preacher or a priest. You're talking about a school teacher. You're talking about someone in some kind of profession like that. Maybe a medical doctor. Somebody in one of those kinds of professions that... just you wouldn't look at unless it was evidence that said, you know, you need to look at this person. Their profession puts them apart from the investigation somewhat. And, you know, when you've got someone like that, even the FBI is, you know, they're looking for someone that's a nut, that's a kook, that's, you know, something aberrant about their behavior.
Especially in the 1960s.
Yeah, and certainly there's something aberrant about the behavior of killing people. However, they're not doing that 24 hours a day.
No, they have a regular. They get up, put their pants on, eat breakfast, and live a regular life. They just have this side life. And you know, I think it's amazing that when you not to go harp again on the BTK serial killer, but I do think that they are similar in some ways. You know, he was married and he had children, but his own statements indicate that he made the decision to get married and have a family more as a an attempt to build a false facade for himself, mm-hmm. rather than any desire to actually be married or have children. It was just his way of thinking, well, I need to look normal. What do normal people do? Normal people are married and have families, you know. So he sort of donned the family the way other people would don clothing, to cast a certain appearance. And like you said, sometimes your position of authority in your job or something like that, or even just your social stature, can be enough to make people think that you couldn't possibly do something like that. And then it's also easier for you to hide that part of your life rather than if you were some impulsive murderer who acted on, you know, instinct or acted without thinking.
And plus, that plays into a social norm for most societies, not just here in America. And that is, we tend to think, number one, the rest of the world is pretty much like what we're seeing. We tend to think that most people think like us, and we're in the majority. And we tend to think that people within our circle of acquaintances and friends are pretty much like us, and since we wouldn't do that, they wouldn't do it.
That's right.
And so if someone like BTK does things to move into those social settings, for instance, getting married, having kids, being active in his church, then he's inserted himself into that phenomena of it's all pretty much like me. Mm-hmm. And so people around him are looking elsewhere. They don't look to people that are like them.
That's right.
And since we've accepted him into our circle, he must be like us. You know, we would not have accepted him if he weren't like us.
Mm-hmm. There was a writer who interviewed Ted Bundy for a book called The Only Living Witness. And he described Ted Bundy as a... He said that Bundy was very much like what an alien would be like if he came down to Earth and tried to mimic human behavior.
All right, we have to step away, and we'll be back right after this, so don't go away. Show. We're talking this evening with Michael Butterfield, and we're talking about this Zodiac killer. Michael, you were saying when we went away for break, you were telling us that someone who interviewed Ted Bundy said that he was very much like you would imagine an alien would be if he came to Earth and was trying to fit into human society.
That's right.
And
they don't think or act like us in most ways, but if they were themselves, they'd be easy to spot. So they figure out very quickly, just like a terrorist trying to infiltrate a country, how to act, how to look normal, what to say, how to pretend to feel a certain way, how to react a certain way,
mm-hmm.
and they become very good actors. And the better they are, the longer they get away with it.
One of the reasons that I said I think Zodiac was reasonably well educated, I think there's some evidence that he's either studied some ancient history in college.
Oh, that's your subject.
Yeah. Or this is someone who spent a lot of time at the library researching some ancient history.
I probably lean towards the latter, but I see where you're going with that.
Now, the reason for that is this cipher, particularly the first one. And by the way, I read the decoding of this cipher that I guess the FBI did it.
Well, it was actually a school teacher and his wife, but the FBI confirmed it.
Well, I find that interesting because while this might be pretty close, the deciphering might be pretty close, I've got that cipher up on the screen for those who are watching on our TV channel. And if you look at the last letter, it's looks like our, almost like our M. That is, in the decoding, they made that the letter, they made that letter exactly the same translation as the, if you go to the top line, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, as the seventh letter, which is a looks like a zero with a line straight through it, looks like Saturn. Mm-hmm. And they decoded that as having the same English translation. And I don't think that's going to be accurate, so I would have doubts about the accuracy of their translation. And even
well,
if the
are
FBI...
Well, you talking about the first code, the one that was in three parts?
No, this is... I'm not sure about that. This is sort of a sepia-colored piece of paper that you've got it by itself, and then you've got it with the decoding.
Oh, okay. So that is the first one. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so I would have, even though the FBI may have confirmed this, I would have some doubts about the accuracy of it, although it may essentially be true. But what's interesting about this is a mixture of three things. This is a mixture of Etruscan. I don't mean the Etruscan language. I mean the Etruscan lettering, their alphabet. It's a mixture of Etruscan, Cyrillic, and some made-up symbols. And so this person, I think, has spent some time in libraries, at least, doing some really in-depth research into some ancient stuff. Now, that's not entirely unheard of for people who are into occult stuff. But these letters are a mixture of Etruscan and Cyrillic. And for instance, you have the backward R, which is Russian Cyrillic. It's not Cyrillic, but it's Russian Cyrillic. You have the backward P. Well, that's Etruscan. The forward P is Cyrillic. The letter that looks like an M to us is Etruscan. We would use the letter N to make the sound that makes. And the V, well, the V has the N sound in Cyrillic. So this is a mixture, the backward L, the backward F, the backward E. These are Etruscan. And so I think this is someone who's spent a lot of time delving into some ancient stuff and kind of came up with his own home brew.
Well, he's definitely a derivative serial killer in the sense that a lot of what he does doesn't appear to be that original. He seems to draw from other sources. And I think his codes, his choice of symbol and his name, his mention of radians used in mathematics and other things, as well as his references to popular culture, to me it indicates in my opinion, someone who may not be have a extensive formal education, although that is perfectly possible, but someone who was self-educating, you know, someone mm-hmm. who spent a lot of time reading mm-hmm. in libraries and absorbing things and sort of creating his own take on everything and using it in his crimes. You know, even the name Zodiac, some people believe that he took that name from a 1930s Charlie Chan movie called Charlie Chan at Treasure Island, where a killer who called himself Dr. Zodiac sent letters in San Francisco and committed several crimes. And so, you know, the idea that the Zodiac gets his ideas from other things instead of being wholly original, I think, is supported by the facts. And I think, personally, that many of his letters, they could be an indication of somebody who has a true form of something like dyslexia or a learning disorder or something because of his misspellings and things like that. But traditionally, the way that experts look at that kind of material, the same way they did with other killers in the past, is the more the letter writer tries to convince you that he's illiterate and stupid, the more you start to begin to wonder that he's putting you on, you know. He's trying to cover up for the fact that he is probably more intelligent than he wants to appear.
Well, and that's the other part of this, and that is, I think that a whole lot of what we see with the Zodiac is smokescreen. For instance...
I would agree. It's hard to tell which is the smokescreen, though, but I agree.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is smokescreen. I think using this code indicates to us that he's more educated than his letters in English would indicate.
Yeah, you know, again, to draw back on the BTK killer, he wasn't, you know, he didn't have an extensive education, but he did have some college education. But he also misspelled letters, words in curious ways that made people think that he might have been faking, because just like the Zodiac, he seemed like he could misspell a word and then spell it correctly later. But it turned out that Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, I believe he was actually dyslexic or had a learning disorder of some sort that caused that to happen. So, you know, it's always hard to know whether or not your ideas and theories are sound, because, as they say, everything depends on the angle of declivity. It all depends on where you're standing and what you're looking at from that angle.
Yep, and we have to look at it from another angle after this break. So we'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Show. I want to welcome all of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that's kept you away for the first hour. But we're glad you're here now. And we are talking with Michael Butterfield, and we're talking about the Zodiac Killer. Falls into the genre very easily of the strange and unexplained. And, you know, we're just sort of talking about some of the evidence out there. But we were talking about how there's misspelled words and so forth. But, you know, I don't put much stock in that. I know a lot of investigators do, but I don't. And the reason I don't is because I'm very well educated, and I spell it however I want to at the time. I mean, truly, you know, I'm in a hurry. If I'm handwriting a note, I'm in a hurry, and whatever comes out of that pen is what you get. I don't edit it. I don't take time to think, you know, oh, no, that's wrong. Let's scratch through that and do it over. You get what you get. And I misspell words all the time. that I know are misspelled. I don't care if it's a handwritten note. I don't care. You just get what you get. Now, if it's something I'm publishing, you know, then I run spell check on it. I get things as right as I can. But I'm that way, so why wouldn't someone else be that way?
Well, I agree with you. And, of course, this is not a comment on you, but I think we all know that having a college education is no guarantee that you're intelligent. not you personally, but...
I say it all the time, so don't feel bad. I say that all the time.
Yeah, and you know, at the same time, this was back in the 60s when, mm-hmm. you know, people, if they were going to write a formal letter, they did it on a typewriter.
Yeah.
And there weren't, you know, you weren't writing emails and things that didn't have spell check and things. You'd write something on a piece of paper, and if you messed up, you had to start all over again.
Yeah.
And in a couple of the Zodiac letters, there were places where he had actually crossed out something and then started over. And, you know, today most people would think, well, you just start the letter over. But back then, you know, that was a lot of work to get that far.
So yeah.
I think he just like you said, he just wrote what he wrote. And it is possible he was trying to fool people by misspelling things. But like I said, with the BTK killer, it's also possible he did it totally by accident.
And, yeah.
You know, didn't mean
to. I think so. I wouldn't read too much into that. But these codes, I would read something into. You know, they need to be looking at someone that spent a lot of time in libraries looking at books, reading books, having to do, I would say, with ancient Greeks and with ancient Etruscans. And I think that would be a good lead. And I am a investigator, a cop investigator, and that's something I would look at here. You know, that would narrow your field some. And you could eliminate everybody in your group of suspects who had no interest whatsoever, ever, in these ancient Etruscan and ancient Greek civilizations. That's where these letters came from. He got that information from somewhere. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of information out there that suggests that the Zodiac was the kind of person who absorbed what he read and just introduced it into what he was doing. And it may not have always had a deep understanding of that
right.
material himself, but just enough to manipulate or use it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also possible, you know, there's theories that the Zodiac was a college professor or, you know, people of high intelligence and social stature. But I think there's a lot of room for speculation about who he was and what he was influenced by. Because, like I said, you know, most of the time our assumptions turn out to be false. So the assumption that he's, you know, some loner or some stupid person who just misspelled words and was crazy and disappeared, that might be easy to digest, but I think one of the reasons people shy away from the other possibilities is because those are a lot more frightening.
Well, and I think you're right, and I think it would be, as we said earlier, I think that we are dealing with someone who was in a profession that sort of automatically insulates them from suspicion unless there is evidence that directly points to them. So a college professor could be. But here's the thing. Let's say this is just some guy, not a college professor. Let's say that everything I've supposed about this is wrong. He's not a college professor. He doesn't hang out with cops. He's not a cop. He doesn't hang with cops. Doesn't hang with ex-military. Let's say that's all wrong. One thing that we do have as physical evidence is this is a person who had been exposed to ancient Etruscan alphabet. All right. Now, let me try an example here. If I hadn't said it was partially Etruscan, Do you know what ancient Etruscan looks like?
I couldn't pick an ancient Etruscan out of a lineup, if that's what you're asking me.
Right. Okay. And that's my point. 99.9% of the population would have no idea what ancient Etruscan looks like. So where did he get it?
But let me ask you a question. Is it also possible that they're just backwards letters? I mean...
Well, no. Some of those letters, you could say, okay, that's possible. But there are some of these that are not... For instance, the box where you have it's a square, and then you have a diagonal from the upper right to the lower left corner, and it's colored in on that lower right corner.
Mm-hmm.
That's Etruscan.
That's okay. Interesting. There's people who believe that some of those symbols are from astrology, but in astrology, I've never seen a symbol that is a square. Divided in half like that.
No.
So that's interesting.
No. And you have, if you take the letter T and turn it upside down so that the crossbar is at the bottom, that's Etruscan.
I see that there above that symbol.
Okay. You have what looks like, how can I describe this? You have the backward L is Etruscan. The square with the line straight down the middle of it is Etruscan. You have it looks like an upside down V so that the point is at the top, but at the top it has a crossbar like a T. And that is Etruscan, but it's in the later period. It's not the earlier period of Etruscan.
So if he was influenced by this kind of thing, like you said, most people wouldn't know this.
Mm-hmm.
So where would the average person come across that? Where would he pick something like that up?
You would have to get that in the library and dealing with books that deal with the ancient Etruscans. In those books,
I guess my question is, would he have to seek that out specifically, or is that something that he might find in a book of ancient writings, or because I know ancient history is your specialty.
You pretty much have to go look at Etruscan stuff to see ancient Etruscan writing. It's not something. I mean, if you're just looking at stuff generally about ancient history, you'll see the Etruscans mentioned, but to find details about them, for instance, the first known bridge work ever. Dental bridge work ever was Etruscan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you wouldn't find that in a book of ancient history, but you would find it in a book that deals specifically with Etruscans, you see. And
I'll have to look into this after we get off the show here, because I'd never heard that before, but it sounds very interesting.
Now, some of these letters are Greek. The circle with a line through it is the phi, or phi, the V might be the Greek letter for N. Certainly it's the Cyrillic letter for N, for the N sound.
And in another code he used the Greek symbol for omega.
So that's why I say this is someone who has a focus on ancient stuff. But what's interesting, and this is why I said I think this person is reasonably well-educated, he's not looking at just ancient stuff. It's more of the esoteric edges of the ancient stuff.
Discerning.
Yeah. It's most people, if they read something about the Etruscans, they go, oh, well, that's cool. And that's it. But this takes more specific research to get to this information.
Hmm. Well, you may be onto something there.
Maybe, or I may be on something here. It remains to be seen. But that jumped off the page at me. I knew he had done codes, but I'd never really taken any look at them till I went to your website. And when I as soon as I pulled this up, I immediately recognized that some of these are from the Etruscan alphabet. They are Etruscan symbols. And one of them, if you look at the last line of that first cipher, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the seventh letter from the left, sort of looks like a peculiar kind of a U. It has a backwards F in front of it, and then this peculiar U, and then a backwards E. Now, that peculiar U is Etruscan.
Well, you know what they say, you learn something new every day.
And, yeah, well, now, the Etruscan alphabet, of course, evolved over the centuries. And so some of this is old Etruscan, and some of it is later or new Etruscan, and but it is Etruscan. But anyway, that's why I think you're dealing with someone who knew to look deeper, who knew to look more at more specific things. So he's reasonably well educated. That doesn't mean he has a college education, but he might. Doesn't mean he's a college professor, but it might.
Yeah, you don't know.
Mm-hmm. If someone who knew how to do the research, and that's the thing, you know, I usually say PhD stands for piled higher and deeper. And when you get a PhD, then you've proven a couple of things, and one of the things you've proven is you do know how to do the research. Okay? This doesn't indicate PhD level research, but it does indicate someone who does know how to do the deeper, more esoteric research.
Well, I think the Zodiac's behavior in his entire career is indicative of a person who's more intelligent than people are going to expect, largely based on one thing, which is he seems to have the ability to assert self-control. He's not someone who's motivated by impulse and acts on impulse and therefore gets himself in a lot of sticky situations. He seems to be a person, at least in my opinion, for the most part, who steps back and assesses things. And to me, that's usually the sign of someone with higher intelligence, because most people act on impulse. Most people act, you know, they just, like you said, you think what you want to do and you do it. You just do it. But he, in several instances, showed that he had the wherewithal to keep his head together, especially in one instance where he was leaving a crime scene and was seen by police officers. Most people would have panicked in that situation, but he remained calm. And that in and of itself is not only a sign of intelligence to a degree, but also a sign of being a sociopath.
Mm-hmm. That's true. All right.
Calm under pressure.
I want to open up the telephone lines. You and I are going to continue talking, but I'm going to open the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us. If you have any questions or comments about this, we want you to have the opportunity to participate. And you do that by giving us a call, 623-444-5889. Now, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we understand that international long-distance calls are expensive. You can call that number, and it'll work from wherever you are on this planet. But it's expensive to do international long-distance calls. So for you, we have another feature that you can use if you don't want to make the international call. You can go to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above the picture, you'll see a link that says Flash Message. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Yes, Jerome.
I have a question for you. On these codes here, these Etruscan letters, I noticed that on the T's, on our regular alphabet, the T's, the vertical line intersects the horizontal line directly in the center.
Yeah.
But in the upside down T's that you say are Etruscan, they seem to be off center a little bit.
That's correct.
Is that normal?
Yes.
That is normal.
That's one of the clues there that says to me that's Etruscan. Yeah. You're very observant.
Oh, well, thank you. But if I'm observant, don't you think that the police doing this, the FBI, would also been equally as observant?
Do you know how many FBI agents have ever seen Etruscan? Maybe one.
How overworked they are?
Maybe one. Etruscan is something that is, first of all, we don't have a lot of examples of Etruscan writing. Secondly, very, very, very few Etruscan words have ever even been translated. It is a code unto itself. And it's very unknown, very esoteric, very way out there, nobody would ever know about it kind of thing. I know about it because I dig around that kind of ancient stuff all the time. But investigators, very few of these people would ever have come in contact with something like that.
Mr. Butterfield, what's the official status of this case right now? Is it still open?
Yes. I think it's important. It's a good question that you ask, because I think there is some confusion in the public. In 2007, when the movie Zodiac came out, there was floating around that the Zodiac case had been closed, and that news had circulated for a couple of years prior to that, when really all the San Francisco Police Department was doing was basically saying, look, we anticipate that there's going to be a lot of craziness surrounding this case because of the movie and other public spectacles like that. So they were basically saying, we're just sort of turning off the phone for a while. We're not going to talk about it. But it is active. There are still people who are working on it. There's still people who are investigating. You know, over the last few years, there have been several people who've come forward and claimed that it was their father or somebody in their family, and each and every one of those people have been talked to by investigators. They've gone out in some instances, collected evidence, and done DNA tests and things. So the case is very active, although I think it's obviously not a top priority.
Mm-hmm. Are you privy to any information that the general public does not, has no knowledge of?
Well, yes, but I wouldn't say that it's necessarily anything top secret, more just things you come across during research that you won't find in the public venue very often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how about any, like, DNA evidence? You know how on these cold cases, they're now being solved from some type of DNA that wasn't available at the time. Is there any physical evidence like that would link it, to the Zodiac killer?
Well, the Zodiac killer didn't commit any sexual crimes, so there's no semen or anything like that left behind. He didn't leave any blood behind at crime scenes. It appears he did leave fingerprints at a crime scene on some of the letters. And the stamps and the envelopes that were used by the Zodiac have been tested, for DNA. And over the years, they've managed to obtain what they call a partial genetic profile, which means it's good enough to compare to a suspect and exclude that suspect, but it is not good enough to say with 100% absolute certainty that DNA belongs to a specific individual.
Well, maybe with you and Kevin using this new decoded information, it'll be solved.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, that would be great.
I don't care who solves it. I just love to see it solved.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Yeah, I think, Michael, I think you go back to 1968, 69, that period of time. I think investigators, even FBI, maybe especially FBI, looking at this cipher would notice some things in here that look like the Russian alphabet, particularly the backwards R. And we had Russians on the brain back then.
Yeah.
And I think they would be led pretty much that direction, thinking this is someone who had some affinity for or association with Russian or with Russian people that was just devising some kind of crazy code. But I think it goes deeper than that. I think what we have here is a mixture of Cyrillic and Etruscan. And I think that indicates that we're looking at someone who was, if not college educated, certainly more intelligent than he's given credit for being, because he knew how to do research and get into the more esoteric details. See, if you let me describe it this way, and I think you'll see this immediately. College freshman, junior, even sophomore or senior, goes to the library to do some research into ancient history and runs across information about the Etruscans. They might not even and probably wouldn't even think to get into deeper, more esoteric books that would deal with the ancient Etruscan language. They're looking for general information about Etruscans, and that general information would say, okay, well, there are very few examples of Etruscan writing. Okay, so that's their general knowledge of it. Someone else with a little bit more professional research approach would say, okay, let's take a look at those examples. Let's see.
I think he definitely, in keeping with your idea there, I think he definitely was sort of like a cook without any real experience, in the sense that he took a little of this and a little of that and used it the way he wanted. But yeah, he wouldn't have to necessarily dig deep into that. He could just as easily come across it. You know, I'm a person who, if I go into a library or a bookstore, I never leave. So I can understand somebody who has those kinds of interests just sitting there flipping through reference books.
Yeah.
And going, this is interesting, and deciding he wanted to use it.
Yeah. It does not, to me, indicate that he had any understanding of the Etruscan language, but he had been exposed to the symbols, to the alphabet. We have to take a break. We'll be back. We're going to talk about a possible connection to the Church of Satan when we come back. Don't go away.
Listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Michael Butterfield. I said we were going to talk about this connection, possible connection with the Church of Satan, and we're going to. But, Michael, I want to take this call first, and then we'll get into that. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Spencer from Clovis, New Mexico.
Hello, Spencer.
Hi.
Hi there, and I just had a question for Mr. Butterfield. I'm a little curious. I saw the Fincher film that you mentioned earlier, which seemed pretty extensively researched and comprehensive. And what I know, a movie can't tell the whole story about anything. It seemed to make a pretty conclusive statement. So my question is, what is it about the case that you feel is still an untold story, or wasn't addressed, or was misrepresented?
Wow, that's a tough question, in the sense that this is we only have 20 minutes left. I guess I could answer that question by saying, first of all, I was a consultant on that film, like many others, researchers and people involved in the case. And it was researched extensively, in the sense that It was researched just enough to confirm what they put in the script, which was based on a book which was based largely on erroneous news reports. And what I would say, what's untold, well, it's sort of the opposite in the sense that the story that you've heard, which is that the Zodiac Killer did this and did that, and that he probably knew the victims, he was an expert marksman, that he called into a TV show, that they recorded his voice, all of these things that have become sort of part of the popular myth of the Zodiac Killer, those things aren't true. So the untold story is really what really happened instead of what you've heard. If you saw the movie Zodiac, you'll know that during the film, there's a part where a guy who calls himself Sam calls into a local TV show and talks with attorney Melvin Belli. The movie tries to give people the impression that that person was the Zodiac, when in fact, the police found the person who made those phone calls and determined that he wasn't the Zodiac. He was a patient in a mental hospital. So that's just one example of the way that the movie tries to make you think that one version of reality is true, when in reality, it's the exact opposite. And the reason that was done is because they're trying to make Arthur Lee Allen seem like the Zodiac.
Why would they want to do that?
Because that's the conclusion of the book that the film was based on, and as director David Fincher and the producer Brad Fisher and others stated repeatedly, this was not an attempt to make a true story or a true account of the case. It was more an attempt to tell the story through the eyes of Robert Graysmith.
Interesting. Do you think they began in that direction, wanting just to tell kind of the fictionalized version, or do you think they discovered that they were on a path that was wrong, but they were too far down at the stop, almost like if Oliver Stone started making the movie saying that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone and then discovered he was wrong halfway through filming?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there in the sense that I think most people, when they buy a nonfiction book, they assume it's nonfiction. So when David Fincher and Brad Fisher and the rest of them bought the rights to Robert Graysmith's book, they assumed it was nonfiction. And it wasn't until they had a screenplay adaptation of that book and were casting and set in motion that they suddenly began to realize that that version of the story did not coincide with reality. And instead of going back and rewriting the script from scratch, it appears that what they did was they went back and tried to adjust things, which in the end gives you a very convoluted version of the story. I mean, even parts of the movie contradict other parts of the movie without explanation. Things come up that are never explained. So I think it's really a sense of they may have set out to tell the true story, but once they realized that the source material wasn't true, they decided to stick with the source material. And that's why the advertisement went from saying a true story to based on real events, you know, until finally what they were saying was it's basically Robert's version of the story.
Wow, I bet most people who have seen the movie don't know that.
Well, anybody who saw the movie and is interested in learning what is the difference between the true story and the Hollywood version, you can go to my website at ZodiacKillerFacts.com. In the Myths and Legends section, there is an article called Fact versus Fincher that will explain to everybody, scene by scene, what is and is not true in that film, and it's referenced with sources and everything, so you know that is factually accurate. I appreciate your question.
Spencer, is this your first time to call us?
It sure is.
Well, don't let it be your last. Good to have you with us tonight. All right. Thanks for the call. I want to, and the phone lines are open, folks, if you want to call. 623-444-5889. I want to talk about this really kind of weird possible connection with the Church of Satan. Tell us about that.
Well, if I had thought to bring the files out, I probably could tell you a little bit more. But those who saw the movie will know the character played by Robert Downey Jr., the reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle named Paul Avery. And years ago, he appeared on a television show and described how they had received reports from the Church of Satan that someone in their group may have been the Zodiac. And we don't really know for sure why they suspected him, but I would guess that you'd have to be doing something pretty strange to stand out as strange among the members of the Satanic Church. But the way that Paul Avery described it was brilliant, in the sense that he said that they thought that maybe one of their parishioners might have been the Zodiac. And although nothing really came of it, it sort of spoke volumes on how bad the Zodiac was and how hated he was as an entity in San Francisco and the Bay Area at that time, because Paul Avery said that the Zodiac killer was so bad that even the Church of Satan didn't want him.
Yeah, well, that's pretty bad.
Right there.
Yeah, that speaks volumes. Do you know if the police investigated that person?
I can't say for sure that they did, because I don't have any personal knowledge of that. But my experience over the years, having read all the police reports and interviewed many of the investigators, tells me that, these guys, they checked everything they could. So it wouldn't matter how crazy the lead was. And you still see some of this today, where people are coming forward and accusing their fathers without any evidence. The police still go check it out. So I believe they probably did. And like in most instances, they probably figured out that, this person was reported just because he was strange, and there wasn't any evidence to indicate he was involved. At least that's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, almost everything is a crime in America, but it's still not a crime to be strange.
No.
Almost everything else is illegal.
There'd be a lot of people in jail.
I'd be, for sure. All right. That brings up the whole concept of something paranormal or something occult having to do with the Zodiac. Now, because we've already talked, I already told you my theory on that. But what do you think? Do you think this guy was involved in some cult, or is this some sort of, does this link back to some sort of ancient paganism or something like that? Or what?
Well, this is my opinion, of course. I'm not claiming that this is a fact. But my examination of this case, and I think I should say for your listeners, I don't just study this case. I've taken classes in criminal justice and criminology and psychology, and do a lot of reading and try to educate myself as much as possible. So my opinions, based on that, for what it's worth, I don't see any evidence that the Zodiac was, I don't see any evidence that the Zodiac crimes were perpetrated by more than one individual, or that there was any particular bent to them that came from the occult or Satanism or anything of that nature. In my opinion, it was one guy. It was one guy who, for lack of a better word or a better phrase, had some serious issues and acted out this fantasy life by assuming this alter ego. And like you said, he was probably very good at compartmentalizing these things, and this only came out when he was committing his crimes, and the rest of the time he seems like a perfectly normal person. So I don't know for sure what motivated him, and I can't say for certain that it wasn't a group, although I don't believe it was. But I think the evidence indicates that it was one man who did it for reasons which will largely remain unknown until he answers that question for us.
Well, I agree with that. I don't think that this, there were some occult things sort of thrown into the mix. Not many, but a few. Using Zodiac as his name can sort of get to the edge of occult just a little bit. But, occult groups, the word occult simply means hidden, secret.
Yeah.
But these groups...
Doesn't mean Satanism or evil.
No, no. So these groups have a very definite set of beliefs and symbols. Now, some people will get upset with this, but please understand, folks, for instance, in Spanish, if you want to say the church services are at 9 o'clock, the word for services is cultos, C-U-L-T-O-S.
Cult.
Yeah. So I'm using it in that broadest sense. Okay, so the Roman Catholic Church uses a lot of gold in the ornaments and the things that they use for the various rituals performed in the church, right? Okay, Satanism will not use gold. They use silver. It's the flip side, their version of doing the flip side of what the Roman Catholic Church does. And so all of their symbols and their ornaments and everything, their tools for their rites, are silver, no gold. So if you come to a crime scene where you find all kinds of satanic stuff but something gold, well, what you know is it's not really satanic. It's somebody that's trying to mask it and make it look satanic. Well, you sort of have that with this guy.
Yeah, you and I discussed this earlier too, that the, you know, the general public seems to believe that Satanists go around sacrificing children and drinking their blood.
Mm-hmm.
And the overwhelming majority of people who self-identify as Satanists don't subscribe to those beliefs.
Well, Anton LaVey spoke out strongly that whenever they talk about human sacrifice, they're talking about it in a symbolic ritual sense and not actual physical human sacrifice. I used to hear stories all the time about how there were actual human sacrifices taking place. I've been at this work for a long time, and I've investigated some of those stories. I have never found any evidence. I found places where they were doing their rituals, never found any evidence of human sacrifice. Just a lot of stories. All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Kevin Smith Show. We are talking with Michael Butterfield, and we're racing toward the end of the show now. We're in the final segment of tonight's show. If you wish to call in and participate in this discussion, you may do so. Gather up your courage. Punch these buttons on your telephone, 623-444-5889. Michael, you have a couple of times mentioned somebody playing a role. This is something a lot of people don't get. Lots of people never think that it may all just be role playing. But I know, because I have investigated and made arrests, You had some people that were burglarizing churches and doing lots of vandalism in the church and leaving all kinds of occult symbols spray painted in the church and on the sides of the church, you know, on the outside, and they would leave three names. I don't know that I can remember all three: Broken Arrow, Pocahontas, and Geronimo. That was it. And when I finally zeroed in on these people and caught them, it turns out those were their names in a role-playing game that they were doing online, and they were living out and playing the roles that was all this stuff that was happening online, and they were actually playing it out in life. Now, if you met these people anywhere else outside of the context of their role-playing, they would seem very normal. So you don't have to have someone with aberrant psychology here. Like they're insane.
Oh, no.
You don't have to have that. It can just be that this is somebody playing a role.
Yeah, there's a lot of these killers who, you know, what separates the boys from the men, I guess you could say, is the more impulsive a serial killer is, the more likely he is to get caught, and the sooner he'll get caught. So that's why you see a lot of these guys who get caught after three or four crimes. The more they are able to elude detection, the more that tells you about how good they are at compartmentalizing those things. And in role-playing, you know, I heard an interesting quote once from a psychologist who had examined David Berkowitz, the son of Sam. And, you know, David Berkowitz had all these reasons for why he did what he did.
Yeah,
and a lot of killers say they did it to, you know, I killed prostitutes to avenge God or whatever. And the way this psychiatrist explained it was so good. He said, you know, you want to think that you have a reason for what you're doing, because then that means you're not just a crazy murdering crazy person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can come up with some reason for why you're doing it, well, now you have a purpose. Now you're serving a greater purpose. And that sort of excuses you in your own mind, when in reality, you're just trying to deny the fact that there's something seriously wrong with you. And role playing allows you to sort of step into somebody else's shoes and pretend that's who it's all about, not about you.
Yeah. There's one phrase that the Zodiac used in some of his, a couple of his letters to newspapers. Where I know for sure in at least one, where he talks about he killed a bunch of people because he was getting slaves for himself for the afterlife.
Collecting slaves for the afterlife.
Yeah. And that would make people tend to think, okay, this guy is either really nuts or this guy is part of some kind of really strange cult. But see, that also can be role-playing.
Yeah, that's a fantasy.
Yeah. And it doesn't...
The idea of killing victims and possessing their spirits is something that goes back to the beginning of time. I believe that particular idea of slaves in the afterlife was believed to have something to do with beliefs from the Philippines and in that region of the world. But the idea of killing someone and consuming their power goes back to ancient times, and even up to today, people, you know, more modern killers, like people like Jeffrey Dahmer, believe that he was consuming the power of his victims by eating them. Doesn't have to mean he's crazy. It's more likely, like you say, it's part of a elaborate fantasy world, and a lot of these guys live in elaborate fantasy worlds inside their own heads.
Well, something that people would be familiar with in popular culture is this. There was a movie and there was a TV series, The Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
And by cutting off the head, or by killing his opponent, who was another immortal, he gets to continue living, of course, but the power of that person's soul then inhabits him.
That's right. And that's something that goes back to ancient cannibals, even cannibals who are still alive, still existing in the world today. Believe that you can consume another person's power by consuming their flesh. And, you know, on Highlander, there can be only one. So
yeah.
That's why they have to go around, if I remember correctly, that's why they have to go around decapitating each other. But in the Zodiac's case, you know, all serial killers commit these crimes to feel some sense of power. And that's why a lot of them take trophies and things, which is mm-hmm. the Zodiac did. He took the cab driver's keys and a part of his shirt. That's part of possessing their spirit, too, that they can look at it later on and relive that glory of their killing days, you know.
That's also part of Etruscan religious belief.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's also part of the Mayan, ancient Mayan beliefs here in the Americas. A lot of people like to think of the Mayans and the Aztec and the Inca and all of those people as being so peaceful. They weren't. They did human sacrifice and they loved war. And that's a very, very ancient belief and is part of Etruscan as well. Do you think this mysterious crime is this series of crimes, you think this is ever going to be solved?
I'm asked that all the time, and I always have to admit that I don't know if I'm really answering that question out of my knowledge base or just out of what I want to have happen. But I believe it can and could be solved. Whether it will be solved or not, I really don't know. But I think if you look at the way that history is unfolding lately, a lot of 40-year-old crimes are being solved by modern technology and witnesses who come forward. So it's perfectly possible, and I keep my fingers crossed every day. I'd love to go to bed some night knowing that the Zodiac Killer has been identified and this is all over. I don't care who it is, as long as we know there's been some sense of justice.
I think it can be, and I'll tell you something. I think 100% of the crimes committed on this planet are solvable.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that they can be solved today, but I think there are 100% of every crime on this planet can be solved.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're in the news right now. They're still going after D.B. Cooper.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You just have to have the right people thinking the right things at the right time, coming together with the right technology, and it happens.
And you have to make sure the public understands that it has not been solved. These suspects, they're not the Zodiac Killer. We need to know who he was. Somebody out there may have the answer, but if they turn on the TV and see that the case has been solved, they may think that what they have isn't important. So I would hope that somebody out there does have an answer or information, or if they know something or found a box with something weird in it after their grandfather died, I hope they will come forward to the police.
Absolutely. Good advice. And folks, you know, if you know something or think you know something, you need to come up with it. You need to talk to the police about it. All right. Stay on the line with me just a minute, Michael. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap. We're out of time. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.